Welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I'd like to welcome you to Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, the very first bilingual show for CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. And today we have yet again another social justice series, and I have with me my dear friend and co-host of this show's, my dear Jake Bradley. Welcome.
Hi there. Thanks, Laura. I'm so glad to join you again for another episode of this Social Justice Lunatic Mondays podcast. And I also want to start out today with a land acknowledgement, a land and First Nations acknowledgement, because we like to do that to help us sort of take a breath into awareness of where we are and when we are and why we are and so on. So just take a breath with me into thinking about how you came to be on the land where you are. Laura and I are sort of close by each other here in what is now known as Chicagoland, now known as the state of Illinois. But we honor the history of Native peoples in this region as we gather together. We know that in this area, Chicagoland, humans have lived and gathered and traded here for thousands and thousands of years. And this here is the traditional homeland of at least 30 indigenous groups of people, including the Potawatomi people of the Council of the Three Fires, the Illiniwek or Illinois Confederation of Tribes, which includes the Cahokia, Miami, and Michikamea peoples, also the Kickapoo people, the Ojibwe people, the Sioux people, the Sauk people, the Ho-Chunk people, and so many more until they were all forcibly removed by the U.S. government. So we honor the history and contributions of Native peoples in this land, and we recognize a legacy of broken treaties and covenants and the need to strive to make right with all our relations. So thank you for joining with me in that, and probably in a future episode, we'll talk more about why we do these things called land acknowledgements and how we might join a current wave of people trying to pay more attention to the history of colonialism and the places that they find themselves moving and working and breathing. But today, our topic is sizeism, fat phobia, thin privilege, things like that, the kinds of ways that the size of our bodies sort of shows up in our lives and impacts the way other people see us and treat us and the way we move in the world vis-a-vis people's assumptions and thoughts and feelings and judgments and our own sometimes, right? Because I don't know about you, but I certainly judge my own body based on things that I pick up from outside and around me. So that's our topic for today. Laura is going to help start us off. And maybe Laura will start off by asking, how does this issue sort of show up in your life? Or how did you come to sort of thinking about this topic?
Oh, never at all. It's not even a thing. Ha, ha, ha.
That, my friends, is what we call sarcasm.
It has, pun intended, totally shaped my life, obviously. When I remember the first comments and comparisons about my body, because I'm the youngest of five, and I'm also the biggest, one of the biggest, but I have another sister. She and I are kind of like the biggest in our family. And I mean, the comments and comparisons and narrative and commentary on our bodies comes from family. I mean, it begins with family. It begins with society. It is never not being there. And as you were talking about privilege on our prior episode, how if you mentioned how if people don't have to think about words like cisgender, is because they have the privilege of being cisgender and they never have to actually think about it. Well, when it comes to size, I never have not have to think about it. You know, it's always been a factor on my life. Excuse me. It's always been used as a weapon. It's always been a detriment to personality. And we get bombarded from many different angles on life, you know, media, TV, assumptions about people of size, medical mistreatment, etc. So there is not one particular place to pinpoint where the experience has been felt the strongest, but it's really the whole package that is there and it never leaves. I guess the only time where it doesn't affect you is when you're talking on the phone, because people cannot assume your size and they treat you like they will treat anybody else. But other than that, I think it affects everything. And the most painful part of it all, I think, is the assumptions of if you are a person of a larger size, then you are fill the blank. That is probably the most hurtful aspect of it all. But, you know, this doesn't have to be a monologue.
Well, so what are some of the kinds of negative assumptions that you find people make? Or assumptions in general that people make based on the size of someone's body. because I think, you know, generally people perceived by dominant culture perceived to be too large are the ones who get the worse side of the critique and the judgment. But there are assumptions that go both ways, every which way, especially for, especially against women or people who are perceived to be women, or trans folks and sometimes like gay men are sort of all disproportionately affected by fat phobia and by body image stuff. But, you know, it seems like there's plenty of sort of shaming to go all the way around. What are some of the kinds of assumptions you feel like are floating around in the world that people make or judgments based on body size?
I think the one that is the most hurtful one and the one that permits the fat phobia will be the last acceptable way of bigotry, because it's justified by a pseudoscientific aspect, is where people assume that larger bodies are unhealthy bodies. And if you are a person of size, it is assumed right away that there is something wrong with your health, that you must be having heart problems or diabetes or any cardiovascular or, you know, certain things that ultimately are only between you and your doctor to be concerned about. And a lot of people feel that it is okay to say, I worry about your health. You should do blah, blah, blah. By the way, lose weight. And I think that assumption perpetuates the stigma and perpetuates the bullying, you know, of people, because some folks truly believe that it's a well-intended comment to say, you know, if you lose weight, you will be healthier. And the really core of it is that my health is my problem. It's not your problem. Thank you very much for your comments, but worry about your health and don't worry about other people's health. And with that, nowadays, ever since all this body positive movements and fat acceptance movements started, then now we're seeing alternative to this health issue which is the justification of fatness and the justification of size. So folks are trying to be accepting by saying, well, you know, so-and-so have a larger body because they had an injury, because they have a thyroid problem, because they have mental health issues, because fill the blank. So that is the counterpart of that health issue, where now we are so adamantly justifying people of size's body shape. And again, it shouldn't be justifiable. It shouldn't be that we utilize certain parameters to accept people of larger size. And again, it's related to health. So I think that is what, there are so many, Jake, but that is one of the ones that affects more, because fat phobia kills. People get undiagnosed or underserved because we're fat. And I'm not going to disclose my health issues here, but I went undiagnosed with something kind of important for 2 years, because what the doctors were saying is lose weight, lose weight, lose weight, you know? And it really is a problem that, you know, permeates all people of size. And if you think about thinner folks or smaller folks or tall people or bald people or other different attributes of bodies for other sizes, we are not walking around justifying like, oh yeah, you know, this person is tall because blah, 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 or this person is thin because blah, blah, blah. I mean, we just accept the person for who they are, and yet we feel very entitled of commenting and having to justify larger bodies, and that is really hurtful.
Well, and I think at the root of that is the idea that there is one size that a person's supposed to be. There's a normal or healthy or appropriate size for a person, even though there are, you know, upwards of 7 billion people on this planet, and we are incredibly diverse in numerous ways and have shifted many traits about us over time and so on. But there's just this ongoing assumption that everyone should be a certain size. Everyone secretly or publicly wants to be that size. And since everybody wants to be that size, we might as well go around giving everybody unsolicited advice and, you know, a variety of things from tough love and teasing all the way down to, oh, really, I'm concerned about you. And I think you should do a thing that I'm going to try to shame or guilt you into so that you meet what people think of as norms. And I will try not to go on a long tangent about this, but I just heard a thing, I think it was on the podcast 99% Invisible, about where the whole idea of averages, and I'm making air quotes when I say that, average bodies, where that came from. And that came during lots and lots of things, unfortunately, in the history of humanity have been spurred by the military and by war, right? And so somebody measured thousands and thousands of people to try to figure out what average size of a military uniform would be, because it was more efficient to, this was at this time when, you know, up to this point, everyone had their uniforms tailor-made to their bodies. And we were trying to send so many people into battle so fast that we couldn't do that anymore. So we needed to start cranking out the GI government issued clothing. And they wanted to know how, you know, what measurements should we use to make it. So they made, you know, everything for a while based on these ideas of average size. And they discovered actually that it wasn't working out for that many people. So they did this follow-up study. How many of the, I think the number was 6,000, or I don't even know, don't hold me to that, but of the say 6,000 people we measured to come up with this idea of average sizes, how many of them actually fit what we say are the average for a person on these 21 different body measurements? And the actual number was zero. Zero people were actually the average person. And I think that's relevant. Sorry for the tangent, but I think that's relevant to what we're talking about. These ideas of average are nonsense, really. And, you know, they just get propagated by the fashion industry and the cosmetics industry and the way that especially women get eroticized and objectified and thought of as, you know, if her body isn't good, then she's worthless. And the only thing a woman could ever want is to be beautiful. And here's the standard of beautiful, right? And, you know, even some really honest models will say, nobody looks this good. This picture of me, nobody looks that good. I don't even look that good, because they spend, you know, hours and hours of post-production time changing my picture of me so that it doesn't actually look like me, or I don't look like that, and nobody can look that good. And so I think the more we try to acknowledge that, the less maybe we will torture ourselves with trying to measure up to some standard that no one in the whole world can meet. But in the meantime, I think there are lots of ways that we propagate, you know, we've been talking about, and Laura's been talking about, you know, specifically comments people make or judgments people make, but there are ways that are built environments around us are made for smaller body people, you know, chairs and aisles and really anything you can think of that's meant to be inhabited by a person, I guess, is generally, you know, airplane seats and all those sorts of things are made really small. And maybe during COVID, we've realized that we're not given enough space out there in the world because they're too tight. You know, these seats and these areas that we're supposed to cram into are not really big enough for us to comfortably fit. I don't know, Laura, if you've got other thoughts about that or if that's the kind of thing that you've noticed or want to point out more.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to point out, because you reminded me of some amazing work done by Jane Kilbourn. And if you have the time to research, really just go to YouTube and type Killing Us Softly, because she talks about this phenomenon of objectifying women and then the incredible amount of violence, objectifying, dehumanizing, and sizing of women in media, and how Photoshop has gone above and beyond to create impossible bodies, impossible. And she says on this series of videos that Cindy Crawford once said, I wish I looked like Cindy Crawford, you know, because they do so much Photoshop to these photos. Also, Jake, I have said it before, and this is my ongoing joke. You give me a rotten tomato and I can trace it back to why is patriarchy's fault that the tomato is rotten. Well, the same happened to fat phobia and discrimination of, first and foremost, excuse me, females of color, women of color, and of size. So the larger amount of discrimination happened to big Black women, and then, of course, brown women, and then other ethnicities. And, of course, it also happens to trans women and then folks, etc. But the biggest side of the discrimination happens to women, because if we are not ready for consumption, then we are not valued. Mm-hmm. And the female gaze is what dictates what women should look like. And this is not something that I'm just saying. There are hundreds of studies there on sizes and how sizes have evolved, how the measurement of sizes of clothing for women have been arbitrarily changed and made smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And when you think of the icon that was Marilyn Monroe back in the 60s or 70s, I can't remember, she was a size 12. And right now, a size 12 is considered a larger size. And I mean,
it's twice as large as what models would consider.
Yeah.
Too fat already. Yeah.
And then not to take off the fat phobia and people of size allyship, but eating disorders and people who literally kill themselves skinny is also the other side of fat phobia. I mean, we saw it when the pandemic hit. Everybody was panicked that they were going to get fat. So the alternative, which was getting COVID and possibly dying from COVID, was less scary than gaining weight during the pandemic. If that is not mind-blowing for folks, then I don't know what else I can use as an example. But it is such an acceptable discrimination, you know, because again, it's hidden behind the so-called health issues, and I'm doing air quotes as well. But when you were talking about places and spaces, yeah, absolutely. Restaurants have this impossible booths where you cannot sit if you're a person of size. You cannot go into rides if you want to go to an amusement park, which I wouldn't go anyway because it's not of my liking, but they are really hard for larger people to sit. Even a church service, you know, the pews are made so small and you're supposed to cram so many people together. I mean, the bus, when you're sitting on the bus, when you're sitting on the train, forget a plane. And all these chairs with armrests that make it impossible for people to sit. And then you have the counterpart, and that's what I'm telling you, is all the patriarchy and the capitalism. Because then if you want a larger chair that will hold you, it's going to be double, if not triple, the price. So my lounge chairs for, you know, summer chairs that I carry when I go to Circle, I have to buy the special one that holds over 300 pounds. And of course, that chair costs me $60, $70, $80 when people of the so-called average sizes, people that weigh less, can go to any department store or box store and buy a chair for what, $70, $80? You know, so it increases 10 times, if not more, the price of things. So we are not only discriminated on that way by people and places not offering variety and diversity for sizes, but we are also hit on our pockets where we have to pay more for the things that we need to accommodate for us. You know, if I want a lawn chair, I have to pay 10 times more than a person that doesn't weigh what I weigh. And that is discrimination.
Yeah, for sure. And then at the same time, you're sort of marketed to for diet pills and protein shakes and Special K cereal and, you know, everything under the sun that supposedly makes you more, not just thinner, but healthier, happier, more desirable to everyone around you. And, you know, if you expect to have your intellect taken seriously, you better be thin and cute and white and, you know, cisgender and straight and all that other stuff, and mostly not even female. But, you know, at least if you're going to have the audacity to move around in the world and expect to be taken seriously as a woman, you have to be thin and gorgeous by whatever the current standards about that are. Not to mention that standards around body shape and type of beauty are also quite variable across time and place in this world. But yeah, are there things that you want to share, Laura, that are ways that we can work to sort of dismantle this sizeism oppression system that we live under, or ways that people who are not considered by society to be large or fat could support or be good allies for people who society does do fat shaming around?
I believe that the first and most important part of it all is understand that fat is an adjective. It's not a bad word. Let's take off the discrimination of it. Because if I'm describing myself and I'm saying, I'm tall, by the way, for Mexican, I'm tall. So if I say I'm tall, I'm a brunette, I have curly hair, I'm fat, I'm a size 10 shoe. Like, there is not one word in that description that is a bad word. So when a person self-describes as fat or identifies as fat, let's not make a big deal out of it. Because if I was a tall, thin, cisgender, blonde male, you will not correct me on describing myself as an I'm tall, thin, blonde, right? So that is one of the very many, you know, if a person is saying is fat, don't come back with, but you're beautiful, because fat does not equals ugly. So when, if I'm saying I'm fat, don't tell me I'm beautiful, because I know I'm beautiful. You don't have to tell me I'm beautiful. I'm also fat, and I'm fat because I'm fat, and some people are short and there's no big deal. The second one is, for the love of God, stop consuming art or comedy or activities that make fun of fat folks. We are the joke of everybody. We are the shorter, the lowest hanging fruit. And people who do comedy about fatness, they're not funny. They're just stupid, because they don't have the wit to make a comedy show about something else, and they have to do it about fat people. So stop consuming that. I used to have a friend emphasizes on use, because they will share a lot of fat memes and fat jokes. And I tried to approach this person a couple of times and tell them, you know, when you share this joke, you are perpetuating this stereotype that others, me and other folks of size. And this person will come back to me by saying, it's just a joke. So let us understand that just a joke hurts me, hurts those around you who are of a larger size. And if you say, it's a joke, my fat friend don't get mad. Well, I have news for you. Your fat friend doesn't trust you enough to tell you how much they are hurt by you sharing this meme. So let's be conscious of not commenting, not criticizing, not laughing at bodies that are larger just because that's how it's been for forever. Let's start changing that. And also accommodate for your fat friends. If you are going to go to, and I'm not saying accommodate as, you know, you have to serve on us hand and foot, but if you're going to go to an amusement park, don't tell your fat friend, hey, let's go to this like super tiny ride where you're not going to fit. And then with the person saying, I don't want to go on that ride, don't be like, oh, come on, let's do it. You know, respect our choices. If I go to a restaurant and I say, I'd rather have a table, don't say, oh, come on, I'd rather sit on a booth. I don't fit on a booth. So, you know, that's what I'm trying to say. To be an ally is those tiny little things that will change the whole world, you know, and they're not hard for you to do. And if you really want to do it, you know, do it. If you are on a journey of caring for your health, please do not come and share with us every single thing that you have done and how you have lost all these pounds and pull into the skin off of your ribs and tell us, look how fat I am. I am disgusted. And then some other adjectives that are really very hurtful. If you are going to a health journey. That is your journey to have. And if you want to share with the world, please be mindful that this is diet culture and that diet culture kills. But if you must share, read the room. Read your audience. Chances are your fat friend is not interested. And another thing, Jake, I mean, we have time, but I know you want to touch on some other topics. I have recently changed my diet and have become a vegan. I am 16 months or so into veganism. And this is really funny. I have had people out of the blue tell me, oh my God, you look so good. Oh my God, you look great. It really is fantastic how in people's minds, because I'm vegan, they think I'm thinner. And I have news for you all. I weigh the same. I look the same. I feel a lot better. I haven't lost not 1 pound. So don't, please understand that having a different lifestyle or a different diet, as in what you eat diet, is not immediately gonna reflect into suddenly, magically, my body shape has changed. That is a testament to, that is your perception. Because I said I'm vegan, you think I look fantastic and I look the same. I'm the same person, you know? And yes, fat vegans exist. We are like unicorns. We are out there though. We exist.
But you also, there are dozens of reasons for someone to become vegan, and you are a very principled and thoughtful person and have made a commitment to this lifestyle choice. For, I assume, a variety of reasons. We probably haven't talked about it much, but I hope that we can, for one of our episodes, talk about veganism and vegetarianism. But you have all kinds of reasons that don't have to do with body size about why you've made that choice, because we're not all obsessed with our body size as our only motivation to do what we do, or not do another thing, or to deprive ourselves, or treat ourselves, or whatever else. I'm happy to hear if you have other things that you want to share along those lines. But before we, sorry, go ahead.
I just want to add something, a new concept of the good fat. You know, so you're a good fat because you're fat, but you exercise. You're fat, but you're vegan. You're fat, but you walk. You're fat, but you're, you know, and it puts us in a category of, we have hope for you because eventually you will not be fat anymore. No. We're going to continue to be fat. We just like moving, or we just like eating differently, you know. But I mean, there's so much. I'm telling you that 45 minutes is not going to be enough. But go ahead, Jake.
Well, we definitely obviously can talk about this for a really long time because it's so tangled up in so many things in our society. I think what we're trying to do with these episodes is really just kind of dip our toes into a wider topic and start people thinking about it and talking about it. But a thing I would love to have you share, because it sort of rings in my ears sometimes in a way that's been really healing for me, is you made up a chant, at least I think you made it up at PSG a couple of years ago when we had a body positivity day. Maybe you had used that chant before, but that's the first time I heard you use it. And I would love to have you share that again with me and with our listeners. And, you know, if there are other things we can talk about, that's fine. But before we close out, I want to make sure people have a chance to hear that and a little bit about sort of what inspired that for you, or how that kind of lives in you as, you know, potentially a part of how you navigate this fat phobic world and don't take in so much toxicity and judgment and shame all the time. Do you mind sharing that?
Of course not. I love to, because it is the least spiritual journey I have ever taken to create a chant. That I was at a party, Jake, and I was having probably one or two Roman Cokes. And that's when I received your text message that you invited me to do this body positivity thing for PSG. And as I was under the influence of Baco and Dionysus, the chant just rolled off my tongue. And the message that I sent you with the chant was as I made it at the moment. So thank you, Goddess, for that inspiration. And I think it came out at a point, you know, where I have already been working for years and years and years on self-acceptance and self-love. And this is not new for people who are part of our community, Circle Sanctuary. And for people who know me, you know, I'm always talking about fat activism and body positivity. And for years and years and years, I thought to my core that I was ugly. Ugly as in the sense of unattractive, really unlikable, gross looking, ugly. And probably about 20 years ago, I started this exercise of looking at myself in the mirror and saying, I love you. And the first 500 million times I didn't feel it, and it was ridiculous. And I thought it was futile and I shouldn't be doing that because it was stupid. And then I started making myself laugh by saying it. And then I noticed that I have this amazingly unique high cheekbones and this beautiful smile and these eyes that are enchanting. And what I have wanted my whole life, which I thought were cute aspects of my face, the little dimple that sometimes you can see here on the side and the little freckles that are under my eyes. And I wanted that my whole life. And I never noticed I had it. And I had it my whole life. And it wasn't until I look at myself in the mirror without the filters of society and without the judgment voices of everybody else inside my skull that I noticed that I am not ugly. And I might not be for everybody's taste, but I consider myself beautiful. Thank you very much. And I think that I have to share that with the world, you know, because now I joke around a lot about my ego and my selfish and this and that and the other, but it really is a labor of love. And if you don't tell yourself that you are beautiful, regardless of your size, your gender, your ethnicity, your color, etc., society is not going to tell you you're beautiful. And even the people that love you might not feel compelled to tell you that you're beautiful. So please tell yourself that you're beautiful and acknowledge that you have this wonderful vehicle that is the only one you're going to have, and try to make peace with it, you know. And that's what I did. That's what I tried, you know, to make peace with it. And as I became more enamored of myself, health became better. I stopped putting stuff on my body that I shouldn't have. I quit drinking. I quit smoking. I basically quit drinking. I drink very little now. I became more active, et cetera, et cetera, you know. And so, you know, when you shut the noise from the outside, you realize what's inside. And then, of course, that's when you call me right after this many years of me working and say, hey, let's do something for body positivity. And it just roll out. My body is all right, and I'm all right with my body. My body is all right, I'm not all right with my body. My body is all right, and I'm all right with my body. I mean, what a mantra. If it wasn't mine, I will be like, wow, that's awesome.
That's amazing. And I think in some ways that's a great place for us to wrap up. We'll just remind ourselves and each other that we may be manifesting body positivity today, and that is an authentic place to be, but we may not always feel exactly the same way about our bodies. And Some people are really amazingly able to sort of fight back against the crap that society dumps on us. And they might think of themselves as fat activists, or they might not. And it doesn't matter either way. Other people are struggling to kind of climb out of that shame. And however someone feels about their body is the way they feel about their body. And it's okay. And we shouldn't expect someone to somehow magically get to a spot where we feel great all the time every day, or that we're always able to push back against the shame or be proud of the skin we live in. And we should never expect that somebody can't do that either, right? Just because the world around us doesn't tell us we should be proud. So by way of wrapping up, I would just say, be kind to yourself, be kind to those around you. No matter what is on or in or around the body that you're moving in, breathing in. And I'm so grateful to Laura for being real and vulnerable and brave and smart in having this conversation with me today, and for this platform to sort of talk about it and bring it to others. And I'm grateful to everyone for spending some time thinking about this with us today. And I want to encourage you to tune back in next time for our next topic, which is how do we all embrace the principles of feminism and womanism and move into a world where we're protecting, cherishing, honoring, and respecting girls and women and allying with girls and women and eradicating misogyny. So that's our next topic. So we're looking forward to being back with you at that time. So if you have final thoughts, Laura, over to you.
You have done an excellent job, Jake, and everybody. Thank you for listening. And just like our station identification, please listen to everything and anything that is on CSMP, over 500 hours on podcasts and work that has been done. Absolutely voluntary work that has been done for you. Paganos del Mundo on Spanish and Portuguese, Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos on English and Spanish, Nature Mystic and Nature Spirituality with Selena Fox on Sundays and Wednesdays. We have Circle Talk twice a month on Tuesdays, and we have Moon Magic twice a month as well on Thursdays. So without further ado, I thank you all for listening, whether you listen live or later. Thank you, Jake, for tonight's episode. It was fantastic. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And until we meet again, never forget that you are loved. Bye-bye.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.